Job chapter 9. Job 9. Job's an interesting book, isn't it? It's sort of a mysterious book. Some men are firm in their belief that Job was a converted man at the beginning of the narrative. Others, like myself, of course what I think doesn't matter, but others believe that Job was converted later on, all the way to chapter 42, the last chapter. Here's the thing, either way, I don't know that there's anything to really argue over and discuss it, but I don't know that it's be worth arguing over. There's good men on both sides, I do know that. Back then who wrote about Job, and then presently today, there are good preachers on both sides who hold both ways. And I do know this, you're probably not going to change your mind just like you're probably not going to change my mind. But there's lessons of value throughout the book. You know, at the end of the book, those friends are called physicians of no value, I think. But they said some good things. They said some things that made good preaching. So, you know, as you tend, I've been guilty myself. You hear a fella go in the book of Job, and I'm admitting the first thing I'm thinking, well, I wonder where this guy's going to stand on his conversion. And then sometimes he'll have a message, and you'll turn that message off because it don't fit when you think Job was converted. We all not do that. I shouldn't do that. I try not to now. Here's my thoughts on Job. I think that he was a sincere but an unconverted elect. What I think. Certainly do not, like some now, certainly do not, and I don't know that anybody that holds that he was an unconverted man holds this. I certainly do not think Job was a hypocrite. His friends thought he was. And God got angry with them about that. His friends thought he was a hypocrite. They said he had some secret sin. That's what they were saying. What is a hypocrite? Well, a hypocrite's a person who acts in opposition to their stated belief or position. Job didn't do that. Or a hypocrite is one who puts on a false pretense. Job didn't do that. And you see Job, this applies, you see Job in many today, this applies to many religious folks today. They're sincere in their approach to God. That's what makes it so sad, because they're missing things. Very sincere in their approach to God. They're nice, they're honest, they're generous, they're prayerful, they're pious, they're dedicated. They're all the things that Job was. And they do those things thinking they justify themselves toward God. That's their thoughts, sincere thoughts. But here it is. Being honest and nice and pious and religious and generous, or whatever good word you can come up with, won't merit you anything. Not a thing. Like you said last week, what I'm doing today doesn't merit me one single thing before God. That's sometimes when I do this is why the book of Job and Job himself scare, and what I believe about Job scares me so much. Job's a much better man than I was. Or am. So whatever you do good is not going to merit you anything toward God. Christ is your hope. Period. Christ. One word is your hope. Christ. That was Job's hope. And Job, and you study Job, and Job knew that that was his. I'm going to show you a little bit here in a second. But that's Job's hope. Christ is everybody's hope, and it's the only hope. Chapter 9, verse 2 of this chapter, Job asks one of, possibly the oldest, but one of the oldest and certainly the most important questions in the world. How can a man be just before a holy, sovereign God? And every man, woman, and child who seeks salvation is going to have to ask that question at some point. How am I going to be just before God? And I think maybe here in chapter 9, Job begins to see some things. He asks if 10 times. He uses the word if through the chapter. Let's look at verse 30. Let's pick up the reading here in verse 30. Job says, if I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou, God, yet God will plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. For he is not a man, God's not, for he's not a man as I am, that I should answer him. In other words, what Job says is, he's so far above me. The first 7 or 8 verses of this chapter, he talks about how sovereign God is. And then here he says that I don't have an answer for him. He's so far, but he's so holy, he's so just, I can't answer him. I can't argue with him. He's right. Everything he does is right. I can't argue it. That I should answer him and we should come together in judgment. We can't come together and argue it out. He's got all the answers. I have none. Verse 33, neither is there any dazed man between us. He said, well, Joe, I got to have an advocate. I need an umpire. Somebody got to stand between me and God in this argument. Now, who is that? So Job knows he got to have somebody. It's the same go-between we got to have. Neither is there any dazed man betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both. A man that can be sympathetic with me and yet talk with God, the God-man. Got to have the God-man. Let him take his rod away from me and let not his fear terrify me. If I had an umpire and I didn't have this fear, then I would speak. But right now, I don't have an umpire. I don't have a go-between. I can't answer God. Got no answer for him. He's just, holy, sovereign. I can't answer. Here's the first point. Quickened, awakened souls are conscious of guilt. Verse 3. Look at verse 3 of chapter 9. We see this in Job. All of a sudden, something's beginning to dawn on Job, just like every awakened sinner. Verse 3 says, if he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. I don't have an answer for him. I'm guilty. He says, whatever he says about me, he's right. I can't answer it. Verse number 19, 20. If I speak of strength, lo, he is stronger. And of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall prove me perverse, wrong. You got no way. Something's going on with Job, isn't there? Job's beginning, his conscience is pricked. He's beginning to, before he kept saying, I'm good, but now something's happening. Not so good anymore. He can't answer these things anymore. Verse 27 and 28. If I say I will forget my complaint, I will leave off my heaviness and my comfort myself, I'm afraid of all my sorrows. I know that they will not hold me innocent. No matter how I feel about no matter how sorry I feel for myself, I'm guilty. I know, God, you're going to hold me guilty. So the quickened, awakened soul is conscious of guilt. They see it. They know it. They feel it. And the very, very most important thing is they realize that they're without excuse for it. That's what Job's saying in those verses. He realizes whatever argument he may bring, all of a sudden, I don't have an argument no more. I am guilty. You ever been there? All men are sinners. All men. But to most, the average fellow we see out here every day, we talk to around work, the average, sin is just a part of life, isn't it? It's a necessary evil, a folly. If they got a child that may be in trouble, giving them trouble, it's just part of growing up. Don't necessarily agree with it, but that's just part of growing up. Boy's going to be a boy. Girls never have much excuse for it, do they? Boy's going to be a boy. The older, if an older person is involved in it, well, it's just something we're going to have to deal with. He's going through a rough part of life. Just that, like I say, it's just viewed as a necessary evil. Some folks laugh at it. There's some that'll smile at it. Not necessarily laugh, but they'll sort of smile, like the boys will be boys statement, you know. They grow out of it. Some even frown on it. Some frown on sin. But it's really not a matter of much thought to them, is it? Talk about the average Joe out here. It's just they don't think about it that much. Don't see it as being a problem, do they? And many, to most even, would admit that they're sinners. It's not hard to get our friends to say that, is it? That's, oh yeah, I'm a sinner. And there you go. There's that scale I was talking about. They'll go from laughing about it to frown about it. They'll admit it. But it's one thing to call yourself a sinner, but it's another thing to feel that you're a sinner. A huge difference there. There's the rub right there, isn't it? There's the difference. Most justify themselves in what they do. And that's all they need to do. All a person needs to do to continue in something is justify himself in it. And it's not hard to do that, is it? My goodness, that's all a fella needs. It's just give me just one little thing to justify whatever I'm doing. And if he can find a reason for it, he'll go on doing it. If he can make it just a little bit all right, that's all he needs. That's the story of life. I mean, we see that we do it ourselves if we're honest. Just justify whatever we're doing, and that's okay. Be 8 reasons you shouldn't, but give me one or two that sort of borderline. I'll take those, and I'll go on with it. Here's a story. It's just a true story. I mean, just heard it. And I'll use his language because they don't know as much as we've been blessed to learn. But a fellow told me that a friend went to a pastor, was concerned that maybe he wasn't saved. Maybe he had not let Christ come into his heart. And remember, I'm using their language. That he felt that there was something missing still. Just didn't feel like he was saved. He felt more like a sinner at times. So the pastor sat him down. He started going through the commandments with him. He said, have you done counseling? He said, have you broke this one? Have you broke this one? And the guy said, no. So the farther they went, the more this fellow that had the problem began to justify himself, because this pastor was helping it along. So the conclusion was, they both concluded at the end that he was okay. That it was just the devil, once again, giving him a hard time, riding his back, I think's the word. Devil's just on your back. So he went on. Felt better about himself, and this syrupy pasture that he had helped that along. But the deception continued, didn't it? So there he goes. He justified himself along with the help of the preacher. No better off. And it goes on and on and on. It's all around you. Here it is. Not till men or women or children, not till they're quickened by divine grace, do they ever, ever, ever truly know they're sinners. Truly know. Sin's like cancer. Men can be deceived. We see it all the time. We know people with cancer. They can be deceived by the chemo and the radiation, and that cancer will go into a remission, and they think they're getting better. And we get news, don't we? Hey, you know, you had Julie, I think you had it for you. I mean, we hear it all the time. You know, we'll bring a prayer request, and then we'll come back and say, I think they're better. They think they're getting better. Not long, and you find out they're not. That's how sin does. It deceives you. Deceives the person. That chemo, that radiation, that remission, that's like sin in this syrupy preacher. Chemo and radiation is like the good deeds. Let's just do another good deed, and then have somebody come along and help you justify your good deeds that presents you favorable to God. In both cases, the sin and the cancer, every day you're one step closer to death. And you think you're fine. And people help you think you're fine. Cancer's not as deceitful as sin. Here's what the scripture says is, it says the heart, my heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? In other words, that who can know it, what he's saying is, I may think I know my heart. You know, this message today is back at me. And if with all I'm talking about a bad heart, I really don't know my heart. I can tell you over and over and over I got a bad heart. And as much as I know I do, I really don't know how bad it is. God's never really let me go. If sin weren't as deceitful as it is, it wouldn't be as destructive as it is, would it? It's like cancer. If cancer was just a bad cold, it wouldn't be that big a deal. How is it deceptive? What destroys? What's the destructive deceptiveness of sin? Well, one thing is this. Very few people go to the trouble to ever think about sin. They don't want to think about anything serious. Most folks don't even want to watch the news. They don't want to think about anything serious, but least of all sin, as it applies to them and their eternal state. They would rather just assume that they're okay with God and assume they're going to go to heaven if there is a heaven. They never really want to think about it, though. Men die. Men die all around you. I'm guilty of this. Men will die all around me, Gary, and I'll say, what are my chances? We've all seen this. A smoker dies. I got relatives right now. Smoke. Dad'll die. Dad'll die with lung cancer. Kid's still smoking. Don't they? I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, a drinker dies. His friends and family all around still drink. The alcohol killed him. They still drinking. Not going to get me. Folks with bad diets, they just let themselves go. And all internal things just start breaking down, don't they? We're thinking, sitting at McDonald's talking about it. Eating two more quarter pounders. It ain't going to happen to me. Don't we think that way? Well, I do. I think that way. That's my thought. Life, we tend to measure life, even believers that were guilty, we'll measure life based on percentages. My chances are slim. You got a 1 in 10 chance. Here's me. I'm the 9. Very seldom will you think yourself as that 1. That's people, isn't it? We need to think more, what if I'm that 1? We don't. We think, I'm probably that 9. Most never give 10 minutes thought of a 24-hour day about what's going to happen when I die. I bet you they don't. They may not even get... I guarantee there's probably days ago they never even think about it, period. Never think about eternity, their soul's condition, God, judgment. They think about everything but the most needful thing. And then they're, you know, why is it so deceptive? They're ignorant. Sin is deceptive because people are ignorant of it. Indifferent to sinfulness. Ephesians chapter 4. Let me read that to you. Ephesians 4, 18. Having the under, nothing's changed since Paul penned this. Having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. They're indifferent, they're ignorant of sin. Religious, many of them are, at least when the preacher's around. And they'll come to you and think they know as much as the preacher, won't they? That guy at the funeral home, little remark, little snide remark. Fella thought he... Now, if you turn that around and told him about how to run his business, he'd been fighting mad, wouldn't he? If you squeeze any fight out of the guy. But they know as much as the preacher about religious things. Can tell you how he needs to do things. And that's the thing. Most will, when the preacher's around, will tell them. Very few ask, whether it's a snide remark or a sincere thing. Folks love to tell the preacher what all good things they're doing. We saw that a couple of Saturdays ago. All the good things they're doing. Like the preacher's got a more direct access to God than they do. Like God only sees the preacher. And they can tell the preacher, and the preacher will tell God, and he never saw what really went on. See how ignorant people can be? Let me show you how ignorant people can be. And it's not mean, but my goodness, you wish they'd wake up. Flip over to chapter 11 of Job there. Verse 12. For vain man would be wise, though man be born like a wild ass's colt. You know what that's really saying? This is several translations. You can go, you look it up. This is what it really says. This is people. A stupid, ignorant idiot will gain understanding on spiritual things, will gain understanding as soon as a wild ass is born a man. So the next time somebody's got a comment about how you need to do what you do, just take them to that. That's what that's saying. That's what that is. Here it is. Until God the Spirit Himself takes a man in hand, no spiritual light's ever going to enter. It's just not you may think you know, but until God opens the eyes, you don't know. Don't know. Preaching, the foolishness of, which is how generally the preachers looked at, the foolishest perception of it is the means of teaching the mind. That's what God uses generally. Whether it be somebody standing here or you as a mom preaching to your kids or you as a neighbor or you as a workmate, all that's preaching. That's what God generally uses to open the mind. Somebody telling you what you're doing is wrong. That teaching the mind arouses the conscience, don't it? Something pricks finally, don't it? If you're an elect, if something hits home. It opens the heart of a sinner. That's how it works. But there's only a few around who tell the truth. Whether you be a preacher or whether you be just common folks like us with neighbors who are telling you how good they are. Very few of us just ain't the right time to say it. I'm guilty myself. Just ain't the right time. I should have said something, but just wasn't the right time to say it. I don't know what the answer is. That's between you and God. I clam up myself. I do. Here's what we don't need to do. Here's what most religious folk, we don't need to coddle them, console them, and agree with them. If you don't do nothing else, don't do that. Just don't say anything. Make them feel uncomfortable with silence, but don't console them in what they're telling you that they're doing is good when you know it's not. Don't allow them to remain in that ignorant state. Now, that'll make them mad enough just standing there saying nothing a lot of times. That's why men are so offended when they hear what we know. They've never heard it before. It goes against what they think they're doing is the right thing. None of their virtues. When you tell them none of their virtues, their deeds, or their duties, or none of that stuff is pleasing to God. None of it. Unless they are a new creature in Christ. God sees everybody only. He don't see you as Teresa or Rebecca. He sees you only through the eyes of His Son. It's the only way He views you. And that makes men mad. I'm a good man myself. Makes them mad. Made Job mad for a while, didn't it? Let me use the body to describe the heart and the soul. Remember my friend Waterhead, the fireman that died a few years ago with cancer. The day he left us, didn't come back to work. We had set out in the bay. Firemen do that a lot. Waiting on the next one. That's what they say. Sit out here and wait on the next one. But we were sitting there, and there were a couple others in the department who had cancer at the time. We talk about this often. We were all of us sitting around and talking about those folks who had the cancer. Waterhead right in the middle of it with us. And then we had a house fire, and he what is a big old guy, and he fought that fire, and he fell out and got him some fluids and got him back, you know, back to the station. We ate supper that night, sat around, talked about another friend who'd been in a car wreck, killed him, ex-fireman. And all the while, we had that fire downtown that night, and that's when he went to the hospital, and they found the cancer another way. But all the while, all that 24 hours, we'd sat there, and that cancer was working. We're talking about others that it worked in. Going about our business. House fire, just our daily duties. All the while, that cancer was working. Transported off that fire, treated him for that, and found the cancer. That's an evil heart. That's how the evil heart works. You do good, you do good, you do good. And all that's waiting, all that old heart needs, one that's void of Christ, is the right evil contagion, the carcinogen, I think they call it, of society or Satan to reveal it. There it is. There all along, wasn't it? Eat up with it. Or he was dead 2 months later. Never came back to work. All right, that's the bottom. We'll go up from here. You got to bottom out. You know, you got that cancer, got to be revealed to treat it. Sin's got to be revealed to treat it. The reality, here's our hope. The reality of depravity never dawns on the non-elect. Never does. See, so election's a most blessed doctrine, isn't it? You'll never know you're a sinner unless you're an elect. Truly know. The reality of sin only comes to those whom God has chosen. And the preacher is often the instrument. He holds that light. You know, he's holding the light. You know, the Phantom of the Opera. You know, we put that mask on, that pretty mask, and take that off, and it reveals a deformity, don't it? Well, the preacher sent to tear that mask off. Jezebel, she sat up in that in that palace and put on that makeup, put on all that makeup. Well, Jehu's the preacher. He said, throw her down. Throw her down. You got to reveal. Throw her down. The wind blows where it wants. And that's how the Spirit is. Men, preachers, the message goes out. Don't go out to everybody. In the heart, it goes out to everybody. A lot of it goes right on through the two ears. But men by nature, they're proud and they're blind. Proudly blind, aren't they? When it comes to this stuff. But then all of a sudden, one day, that one that's been proudly blind, all of a sudden, one day the Spirit, there's a change in him. You know, he may sit up a little straighter, or he may look down in church. I don't know. Something may finally get to him. What you hope is, isn't it? But one day, light dawns. And the Spirit shows him to be different than he ever thought he was. Views himself in a different light. Maybe 30 minutes before he walked through those doors, he thought he was a completely different person. But the light dawns. He was where he was proud a while ago, now he's desperately wicked. See, there's a vital connection between good, sound doctrine and the souls of men. Sovereign grace is cherished only by those who've grown under the weight of sin. You can know it. You can know the 5 points, but you don't cherish it. Unless God's crushed you and then picked you up. Mr. Hart wrote this. He said, never had you felt the guilt of sin or sweets of pardoning love unless your worthless names had been enrolled to life above. Only the elect see sin as sin. Only the elect will ever hear the gospel as gospel. That's what the old preacher said, right? The very first time a man hears the gospel as gospel, that man will be saved. And he will. When he hears the gospel as gospel. Like that dark cave, you've heard this before, or old dark cellar or crawl space or basement. You're going through there and you turn a flashlight on and all of a sudden there's spider webs and bugs scatter. All those things were there before, wasn't it? What'd you need? You need the light to reveal it. That's how our heart. I had messes in there. It was in Job. Had to have a light to reveal it. But that's their only way of hope. You know, with a believer, you got to pass from, you know, we're born in life, but believers got to pass from, they got to die to live, don't they? Got to pass from death to life. Every saved soul must pass through conviction, a broken heart, fear, struggle, whether he's going to ever be converted or not. Everyone, every saved soul got to go through, Bunyan said, that slough of despond. Everyone. There's a slough of despond for everybody that's saved. Why is that, you think? Well, I have two reasons I can think. Probably more. Two is when you're crushed under conviction and God raises you up, it makes mercy more precious, don't it? And it makes sin more heinous. I don't want to go back where I was. It's like a horse that's burned being afraid of the fire. Don't want to go back. And then here's the second point. Awakened men will use useless means to obtain cleansing. Verse 30 there. If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean. How many of us do that? How many do we know do that? Purify our own souls by doing better. That's a natural thing. I mean, when the heart's initially convicted, it's a natural thing to try to do better in it. Nearly everybody will do that. Kim came over the other day from walking on the treadmill downstairs. I said, you get anywhere? No, she didn't. That treadmill's still about 2 feet from the wall. Well, that's how folks are. Sinners the same way. He seeks salvation in and of himself, and he runs and he runs and he runs. He don't get one step closer to God. Wears himself out, not a step closer. Labors with not one ounce of result. Still 2 feet from the wall at the end of the day. Fast, they pray, they give, whatever, on and on and on and on it goes. Most folks in religion hope, if you get to think about this, most folks in religion hope for a reward that God's never required that they do to get one. Right? Doing things God never told them to do. And they hope there's something for them at the end. They really never know. They'd rather do anything, even death, than to submit to salvation by grace. Romans 10:3. For being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own, have not submitted themselves to the righteousness of God. And they won't. They won't. They'll die before they do. Why do they use snow water? Why snow water? Well, number one, it's hard to get, especially here, isn't it? Hard for us to come up with snow. In religion, in seeking God, men seek to do hard things, difficult things, don't they? To gain salvation. The harder, the better. They'll go up steps on their knees and go through fastings and scourgings and all kind of things, thinking them that merits them favor with God. It's hard to come by. The harder I make it, the more assured I am of having. And then snow water's pure, isn't it? Folks seek religion that's the cream of the cream. Purest rituals, cleanest life, cleanest do's, don'ts. You know what I'm saying? Best of works, deny any kind of pleasure, never smile. The more I frown, the closer I am to God. And then thirdly, snow descends from heaven. Boy, folks love this. Mysticism. Anything that, if I saw a picture of Mary on a loaf of bread, I'm for sure going to heaven. Anything mystic. That's why all these movies are so popular now. Crazy things, tree limb falling and healing a girl and... Mysticism, folks love it. Comes straight from heaven. We heard that a few weeks ago. A lady praying over all the crazy things about whether... Well, you got to be careful how stuff goes out. Just praying over these things like God's, I pray for a creek, a little bubbly creek, and looked up. Not what it is. God's not some old man that looks at that like, oh boy, she's so sweet. Make my hands never so clean. What is that? What it's literally saying is if I wash my hands with soap and bleach, if I get them just as clean as you can get them. Job says, niter is what they call bleach. Wash my hands with soap and niter. Two verses. All that stuff that Job's talking about doing in that verse 30 there, the snow water and the washing hands, that's worthless. It's worthless. Two verses. Without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. Second verse. The blood of Jesus Christ, His Son, cleanses us from all sin. God alone removes and remits sin. He alone. And He does so only by the blood of His Son. And then lastly, but the chosen, the quickened. Here's what God will do to those. The huge group, He lets go. But to the chosen, to the elect, what does He do? Verse 31. Yet you, God, shall plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. You know what kind of ditch that is? That's a sewage ditch. That's where they had their outhouses. and they had a ditch in the waste from your body and the waste from your food went into that ditch, and after a while they'd wash it on down. That's what that ditch is. Not just a rain ditch out here. It's a sewage ditch. It's a filth, nasty ditch. God's going, and what Job's saying, God's going to throw, he's going to pick me up by my waist and the scruff of my neck and throw me head over heels in that ditch. And just be glad he does. Be glad he does. He said, it's so nasty that my own clothes shall abhor me. In other words, what he's saying is when God throws you in that ditch, nobody gonna touch you with a 10-foot pole. It sort of trickled down, but as you study that, that's what it means. That's how we'd say it today. We've been around, you stink, man, you stink. I wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot, but that's how God's done that. Here's another fire story. That's why we sit around in the engine bay so much. We come up with all these stories. Here's another one. A few years ago, we had a fire there behind at Hudson's, Buford's Hickory House there. Buford's got a pit in the back. It was dark, and I was walking around, shining the lights, seeing if all the fire was out. And they left the top off that pit. Pit's about, I don't know, 3 by 3 by 3 or so. I fell in it. And that stuff is just above your knees, up about hip, and it splattered all over me. All over me. I had to finally, nobody could stand me. I mean, I went back, I washed them, washed my gear. Finally had to throw that gear away. It stunk up the engine bay. I couldn't put it on. I sweat in. That's what we're talking about. That's what these religious works, they stink to God. He's not going to have them. He threw you there. He's not going to let you be comfortable with it either, if you're an elect. All enlightened people, there's a difference between enlightenment and awakening. All enlightened people attempt good works. Good deeds or prayer or go to church, they give, they quit cussing, they may quit telling bad jokes. You know what those are? They're hand washings. That's all they are. It's just hand washings. You're missing everything else. God's not going to let that happen. He's going to throw you in that ditch and you're going to get it all in your ears and in your eyes and in your mouth. It ain't going to do no good to wash your hands. It's everywhere. He's going to let you see finally what he sees. Your total nasty filth. And God undertakes the task of doing that. He does it. Look at Revelation 3. I'm almost done. I got to hurry. Revelation chapter 3. Verse 14. And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou were cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, that's what we're talking about now, because you say, I say, I'm rich, I'm increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and you don't know that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Verse 18, then I'm going to do this. I advise you to listen to me. To buy of me gold tried in fire. You want pure religion? You want purity in religion? You want purity in your deeds? You want purity in your love? That's gold. That's pure. That's the symbolism there. It's pure. You want purity in what you do? You better get it from me. And white raiment? We know what that white raiment is, don't we? You think your clothes are clean? You better get my robe, my son. You better find yourself in his righteousness. He said, I'm telling you, this is what you better do. And thou mayest be clothed, or that thou mayest, and that the shame of thy nakedness does not appear. And anoint thine eyes with eye salve. You think you see now, but you're just blind. You want to really see, you better get in this word. Get in this word. Listen to that preacher. You may not like him, but you better listen to him. He's telling you the truth. Let my salve, this is God's salve, that this salve will not open your eyes where you can see. God will undertake. He undertakes it. With Job, he undertakes it with all his elect to show them their filth. Show them where they're wrong. How's it done? Well, it's through what we're saying. Counsel, revelation, the word, the salve, the preaching of said word. Last two weeks. I didn't know what you were going to preach about this week or last week, and he didn't know what I was going to say this week, but there's so much alike, aren't they? God knew what was going to be said. He knows. He knows. No, what group's in here? Maybe it was just all for me. Could have been. I'm certainly open to it. But last week may have disheartened somebody. This is how God works. This week, you may have come in and felt good about yourself last week, but been left a little disheartened. Then this week, you cut a little deeper. The same message, it cuts a little deeper. Well, Lord willing, if you're elect, maybe next week it'll cut everything. It'll root it up. Cut it all out and root it up. All your good deeds will be gone. That's how God works. Here's the key. Job was perfect and upright, feared God, and hated evil. See that in chapter 1, don't we? Job was renowned for his righteousness. But a glimpse, just a glimpse of God, exposed the depravity in his soul. Hypocrite? Like I said, I don't think so. Friends may have, but I don't think so. I think Job was firm in his integrity, refined. I think he was pious. I think he had true pity. Concern for others. He prayed for his kids. I think all that was just as sincere as Job could be. I think Job really felt like he was doing the right thing toward God. But a touch of God's finger revealed that depravity. What next? Was it ruin? Mm-mm. Full redemption. Look at chapter 42. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou can do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. I've been completely exposed. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I did not understand. All those ifs. Things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Didn't know what I was talking about. Thought I knew, but I didn't know. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. But now my eye sees thee, wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. It's God that justifies. Only through the work of his Son, his substitute, will you be justified. His justification is the only thing he'll say. His righteousness is all he'll accept. His works are all he'll accept, not yours. Who does he justify? The ungodly. That's where you've got to come. I'm ungodly. First he awakens, then he condemns your conscience, and then thirdly, if you're elect, if you're chosen, he'll justify according to grace. In myself, condemned. In Christ, he's my all.